AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. Welcome to December, Peter. Happy holidays.
I'm fired up. It's a fun time of year. It is dark at 4:30 right now. We got our first snow here in the Boston area last night into today. So I woke up with a white Thursday. But no, I'm a huge Christmas guy. Christmas movies have been in the rotation now since Black Friday. I'm cranking them out. And
what's your 80 grade Christmas movie? What's your top one?
Oh, my favorite one is It's a Wonderful Life. And then like my second favorite, and in my opinion, the funniest, is Christmas Vacation. I'm a huge Chevy Chase guy. So It's a Wonderful Life would go 1-1, and then 1-2 is Christmas Vacation, and it's a more like, it's a much lighter watch, and I think I could recite almost every line in it.
Yeah. Nice.
What about you?
My 1-1 would probably be A Christmas Story. I really like that one. Let's see. I like the Jim Carrey Grinch. I was always a fan of that one. That one came on a lot.
That's an awesome one. I love the claymation too. We can talk. We can.
I haven't seen that one in a long time.
We can have a more fun episode potentially around the holidays or a longer conversation.
Draft some Christmas themed movies or other things.
I'm a big Rankin Bass guy as well, Rudolph Frosty. But
you said that it was a dark day for you because it was getting dark in Massachusetts. It's a dark day for me, Peter, because not only is UNC very clearly not a football school, they're also 4-4 in basketball. And if UNC is not good in basketball, and the entire ACC also went, I think, 2-14 in the ACC-SEC challenge. If the ACC is also not good in basketball, what are we even doing here? And then right before we got on this podcast, Peter, I saw the news, or apparently the rumored news, that was in our Slack, that North Carolina had interviewed Bill Belichick for its head coach opening. And again, as the resident Tar Heel alum and also Pittsburgh Steelers fan, the amount of distress that caused me is crazy, and I hope it's fake.
That would put you in such a mental pretzel. It's such a non-envious mental pretzel. But like
it wouldn't be no pretzel for me, Peter. I'm sure as the like Massachusetts guy, you will tell me about all the reasons why it would be great for our football program. If it ever happens, which it seems insane that would happen. But for me, I would just be entirely out. I'd be done.
He's a great coach, but I'd probably give you the opposite because I actually can't stand the Patriots either. So
oh, okay. Beautiful. I lumped you into the Patriots fandom. My bad. I apologize. That's a cardinal sin.
But I'd be shocked if that happened. On Three, which is where we found it from, they do a great job on the college basketball recruiting scene. They said they interviewed him. I don't think they'd make that up, but I'd be so shocked if that's who they end up going with. But I guess time will tell.
Well, let's hope it doesn't happen. But enough with the nonsense, which is UNC Athletics at this stage. Let's get into, and again, just football and basketball. I'm not talking about UNC baseball team in a fandom perspective. That feels like it would be a bit odd. But let's talk some draft, Peter. We are wrapping up our 2024 divisional reviews of the draft classes. We've got the NL West on deck today. It's 6 of 6. We're gonna finish this thing. Let's just hop into it. Arizona is first up. If we're gonna continue going with our alphabetical order for this thing, why not? So they were picking number 29, the very back of the first round, thanks to their World Series appearance. I'm sure they were thrilled to be picking at the back of the first round this year. But they took Slade Caldwell at number 29 overall, high school outfielder, with their PPI selection at pick 31, thanks to Corbin Carroll. They took Ryan Waldschmidt, a Kentucky outfielder, at 35 in the actual supplemental first round. They took high school shortstop J.D. Dix. In the second round, they took Puerto Rican catcher Ivan Luciano. In the third round, they took Presbyterian College right-handed pitcher Daniel Egan. In the fourth round, they took Francis Howell High School shortstop Titus Sissel. And in the fifth round, they took Indiana right-handed pitcher Connor Foley. So just the amount of players that I'm listing off here, they had a lot of prospect capital this year with their extra picks between the first and second rounds, adding a lot of talent. I guess you recently pulled a card with Seth Mates on Daniel Egan, a signed autograph Bowman card, right? That was the card you guys pulled. So a lot of fun stuff here with the D-backs.
I was going to say that's a pretty easy, that was like the D-Wade to LeBron alley-oop type deal. But yeah, Seth and I broke the Bowman draft box yesterday. You can check it out on the YouTube. It was a unreal pull. It was an out of five Daniel Egan autograph. And ironically enough, we pulled like Titus Sissel like six times.
So. I was watching it. I'm not a card guy at all. So it was like a learning watch for me. A lot of the stuff you guys say, I just don't fully understand, but it sounded like that was a pretty good Daniel Egan card to pull. And we can talk more about the players if there are some card collectors out there that just want to know more about those guys. But yeah, I mean, thoughts on this class? Slade Caldwell is a lot of fun for me. Ryan Waldschmidt, I'm honestly surprised Ryan Waldschmidt slid to 31. I thought of him as a guy who could probably go in the late teens, just given some of the pre-draft buzz that he was getting. He is not like my specific cup of tea, but he checks off a lot of boxes that I think a lot of people can just have a lot of confidence in. The hitting ability, the power, just the performance numbers in the SEC. And then I really like J.D. Dix at 35. He is a fun player in a profile that I maybe get a little bit more excited about. I was a little surprised with Luciano where he went, given where we had him on the board. But he does have a chance to stick behind the plate with plus arm strength and solid defensive work. So a lot of mixed profiles here. We get into some pitchers further down the board, but hitter heavy up top and from a couple different demographics.
I really like, and you alluded to it, I like the two hitters that they took at the top with Caldwell and Waldschmidt. And Caldwell was one of my favorite guys at the prep level. It's just, I mean, he kind of fits in that bucket of like damn good baseball player that you and I talk about a lot. It's a contact oriented swing. He's got a knack for being on the barrel. He's an impact runner. The baseball sense bleeds through and kind of all that he does on the field. And he plays the game really, really hard. He kind of fits the mold of this prototypical top of the order guy with sneaky thump. I mean, there's no projection left. Like he has this kind of compact physicalness that's a little bit akin to Slater DeBrun, or I guess Slater DeBrun is akin a little bit to Slade Caldwell in that regard, but nonetheless it's like kind of this really fun like one or two hitter profile, classic table setter. And then you supplement it with Waldschmidt, who was kind of, he was one of the more popular I think helium names on the college side, even leading into last spring. And then what he did over the course of the spring was really impressive. He came off a torn ACL and it was a kind of a freak thing. He did it playing summer ball in the Cape. He, in one of the outfields he was roaming, there was like a kind of a dip and he was going to field a base hit and his knee just like it like buckled and gave out. It's like completely freak thing, but like he recovered really quick. And if you catch him on the right day, I think people really were split a little bit on Waldschmidt. And he was like, I don't know if I could quite reach for him with my first pick, but like second pick, I'd be thrilled. And I think the D-backs probably fit that because, I mean, it's, you can argue 55 hit, 55 power, he can run. I think the only thing that you can kind of be a little bit worried about is the defense. I think he's a left fielder long term. I think that's where he fits best, but the offense for me is real and he's not a metal bat merchant. He did it with wood. It's a limited sample size, but what I saw, it's the offense with him is very real. It's an advanced approach. He's got a knack for being on the barrel. He generates impact. He checks a lot of boxes. And then Egan in a similar breath was one of the more kind of helium college pitchers, albeit a little later in the cycle and not as big a name as Waldschmidt, but fastball up to 94, has two effective breaking balls and a more of a big downer curveball and kind of a two plane slider. Both were effective at Presbyterian, a fun arm. And then Connor Foley, I think, is a chance to be a monster. I just, you got to develop the strikes, and he's got to take a step forward in the command and control department, because he's got a huge arm. He's this big imposing figure on the mound. He's 6'5", 235, fastball up to 99 with a ton of ride through the zone, has a hard gyro slider and a really, really good changeup, both of which changeup generated a whiff rate of 52%, slider 35% last year. They both get whiffs in and out of the zone. The key is just honing in on the command, and I think that's going to help his already impressive arsenal play up. So I'm curious to see how the strikes develop.
Yeah, well, you hit on some of the college players. I'm going to talk about some of the high school hitters here, because I think it's a really fun, athletic prep hitter group that they took. Slade Caldwell was a multi-sport athlete and a talented running back in high school. Then you got J.D. Dix, who's also a good athlete. Moving further down the board, Titus Sissel in the fourth round. The D-backs were pretty effusive in their praise of Sissel as an athlete. They have him as a double-plus runner. He's got a chance to be a really good athlete and defender. And then in the 11th round, Bo Walker is also a kind of a multi-sport plus-plus runner, chance to be an above-average defender in center field. So good speed, athleticism combo for a lot of these players. And then with Slade Caldwell, obviously in the first round, probably a lot higher expectations for the offensive ability. And his hitting ability was on display all summer prior to his draft year. He is a table setter. He's got a selectively aggressive approach, I thought. He puts pressure on defenses. He gets out of the box quickly. He accelerates fast. I think he plays plus defense in center field. Like, yes, he might not have the most power in the world, but he's also relatively young for the class. And I think I would be pretty confident that he's going to stick in center field and not have the sort of power pressure that you might have by moving to an outfield corner. So I like a lot of I feel like I tend to like a lot of the hitters the D-backs target in the past. Like, they seem to be an org that really likes these hitterish types. And they get a couple more in this year's draft class. Yeah, any others you want to mention?
There are a couple of arms that I like a little bit further down the board. Travis Garnett had a really rough pro debut in the command and control department, which has kind of long been, his bugaboo. He walked 9 across 2 innings and 3 appearances. That's a real issue for him, and it's not just isolating that in a vacuum. So, I mean, that's going to need to improve, but the stuff is there with him. It's a really hard power, high spin slider that's, you know, it's got sharp 2-plane tilt. He'll lengthen it out against lefties. Fastball up to 96, 97 with life through the zone. 2-pitch guy. I think he's a reliever all the way, but I mean, you can only be so effective if you don't throw strikes. Braden Quinn is more improved. Quinn had an interesting path at UConn, not super, super interesting. But he struggled in 2023, only threw 7 2/3 innings, got hit around a little bit, came back this year, was really, really effective for him, struck out 67 across 44 2/3 innings, had a productive stint on the Cape. He's off to a really strong pro debut. He had a really strong pro debut. I think he struck out 9 across 7 shutout innings. Another guy that's kind of a reliever all the way, but they snag him in the 14th round. He made a lot of positive strides at UConn. Fastball is a little bit outlierish. I averaged, I think it looks like 21 inches of ride through the zone up to 95, pairs it again with a kind of a longer than it is deep slider. It just kind of bodes well for an effective 2-pitch mix guy from the left side of the bullpen. So if Garnett's around the zone, he's got a chance. That's a big if. But Braden Quinn is a positive early return guy.
Cool. All right. I don't have any more on the D-backs, so we can move into the Rockies if that's good with you.
Absolutely. Selfishly, not to foreshadow our discussion on the Rockies, this one I've been excited to talk about.
Okay, awesome. Well, I was about to mention the fact that every single player drafted was of the college demographic. It's straight 4-year. There's one JUCO in the 14th round, Sam Gerth, who I actually think is one of the more exciting day 3 names here. I think there are a lot of day 3 names that are kind of interesting here, but let's start at the top. They picked 3rd overall, so there's a decent chance they were going to get a pretty impact player no matter what happened in front of them. They wind up with the number 1 player on the BA board, Georgia's Charlie Condon, selected as an outfielder. In the supplemental first round at pick 38, they took right-handed pitcher Brody Breck out of Iowa. In the second round, they took Texas outfielder Jared Thomas. In the third round, they took South Carolina catcher Cole Messina. In the fourth round, they took Clemson third baseman Blake Wright. And then in the fifth round, they took Texas right-hander LeBaron Johnson. in our draft reviews that came out a few days after the draft, the theme I put on this class was the BA board, because the BA rankings really liked a lot of these picks. I think we had four top 100 players with each of their four top 100 picks. Almost everyone who was taken in a range that we really liked. Again, one, the number one player at three, the number 28 player at 38, the number 58 player at 42, and then the number 72 player at 77. If you're just using our board to evaluate a draft immediately after, which is dubious, given how the draft works and how we need to just give some time for these players to pan out, at least the draft board likes them. So if we've done a good job, this will be a good draft class. And I'm hopeful that's the case, because I really like Charlie Condon. His debut was not super encouraging. I think both of us are kind of on the same page where we're not going to freak out too much about that. He had an injury. I believe in the hit and power combination with him, clearly, is why he ranked where he did. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about in this class. Peter, where do you want to start?
I think it feels right to start with Condon.
Makes sense. Top player in the class. Record-setting college season. Scary debut. Although, are we making too much about it? There's a lot of strikeouts.
Maybe I'm in like the nervous Nelly, like pearl clutching group, but I think there are legit like hit tool questions with him.
No,
and
Peter, how could you?
I know. He had 100 ABs in his pro debut. That's again such a minuscule sample size, but I think against spin, and I'm hoping it will get better. Mm-hmm. And I do have a feeling that it will, but there are some real pitch recognition and miss issues, and I just am hoping that he's able to make contact enough to tap into this impact. But like, I was a little bit not skeptical of it in the lead up to the draft. And like, this is classic hindsight is 2020, and so easy to say now that he had like a not super stellar pro debut. But the one thing in looking under the hood with Condon was like, he did struggle with breaking balls at times and making contact with breaking balls and expanding the zone. And I think that that just got.
Yeah. If you look apart. So I did a little piece on this back in August, trying to kind of see what was going wrong with him when he was striking out. And you're right. It is the secondary miss that is specifically the question. Through his first 14 games, the miss rate versus breaking balls was 52.9%. Which is extremely high. He never had real strikeout concerns in college. I think it was a 17.7% clip as a redshirt freshman in 23. Then it was a 13.5% clip in 24. So certainly numbers that are perfectly fine given the amount of like power production he was giving you each year. But if you did dig into the numbers on Synergy and you look at his college miss rates, I mean, his overall miss rate 21%, perfectly solid number that doesn't stand out. Against fastballs, it was 13%, but against breaking balls and off speed, it was 29 and 30% respectively. So the proportion of his miss came largely from those two pitch types, and specifically the spin and pro ball was giving him some issues. So if you think that's always been a question mark for him, maybe you're more concerned about it moving forward. I think I'm a little more optimistic than you right now, but certainly he needs to make the adjustment. I just think he'll be able to make it once he gets a larger sample and is fully healthy.
Yeah. And I think I'd be really shocked if he doesn't. Like, he's not going to run a 34% K rate for his career. Like, he's going to be more productive than he was in his pro debut, but I am more concerned than I think you are right now. And I saw a little bit of a taste of it in that NC State Super Regional when they threw and trotted out two really high quality relievers. Really, as high quality relievers as you'll see at the college level, with Derek Smith and Jacob Duden, two guys with advanced feel for really good sliders. And they kind of diced Condon. when I was sitting there watching it on TV, I mean, I thought it was a really favorable matchup, as favorable as you could have gotten at the college level, at least, in trying to attack Charlie Condon. And like, I will say, it's not going to get any easier. Like, he's going to probably be reassigned to high A. And then, I mean, it's not going to get, and double A is just as difficult in terms of stuff and velocity, and just everything is going to continue to tick up and up and up. So
yeah,
I'm curious to see how he's able to adjust, if he's able to adjust, but like, I am very wary of the hit tool.
Okay.
A little bit, raising my eyebrows a bit, but again, I, now that I say that, he'll probably go out and prove me wrong and make a big time adjustment, which would be great to see because I am pulling for him. But
I entered this convo, Peter, thinking that you liked this class. Do you have any positives to spin for us here?
I was going to say the rest of the tone that I'm going to have when talking about the Rockies will be will not be anti-con. Like, I do like this class because Brody Brecht has as much upside on the mound as anyone that was drafted, including Chase Burns. There are just the question marks with him are just more pronounced. Like, where is he going to end up? Is he going to be able to achieve that ceiling and upside of headlining a rotation, or is he just going to be a guy that you kind of stick in the back end of the bullpen and say, hey, go get us three outs, go get us six outs? But he's an elite athlete from a stuff standpoint. He is unmatched.
I would take Burns' fastball shape over his. Yeah. But in terms of arm talent, like he's in an elite tier of this class for sure.
Yeah, I'd say just how Blake Burke can go toe-to-toe in the raw power department with Caglione, Brecht can go toe-to-toe with Burns in the stuff department. I mean, the fastball is up to 102. Like you, I would take Burns as just the pitch itself over Brecht's, but he's got just this demonic power slider. And then
the one question I had with Brecht for his fastball, and I don't know if this is, I'm sure it's like partially a command issue and partially a shape issue, but it did seem to get fewer misses than you would expect given the velocity. I don't know, like it has been like a cut fastball at times that has been more of a ground ball inducing pitch, and maybe that'll just be fine, but I have some shape questions with it, and I have some, obviously, I mean the biggest questions with Brecht are the control, but in terms of the breaking ball, I think it's one of the very best breaking balls in the entire class. Like, this was a filthy, filthy pitch that makes hitters look silly. And even when he wasn't close to the zone, he would draw pretty bad swings. Just overall, the control is obviously going to have to come with him moving forward. And if that wasn't a question, we're talking about a guy that's probably a top 15 pick in some capacity. But the fact that he went at 38, like instead of 15 to 25, I think makes me more excited about the pick.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think with the Rockies, I mean, when you see him on the board still there at 38, you got to be really, really fired up about it. Yeah, there is a lot to develop. And I'm with you. The fastball didn't play, I think, how it could have slash should have collegiately. Like, that's a pitch that you should probably be able to dominate with. So I'm curious to see how they tinker with it. Like you said, I think that the low-hanging fruit with it would be trying to tweak its shape. But the slider is the best of its kind in that draft class. And, like, I don't know what it, like he's got to throw that split change more. He needs a third pitch if he wants to start. And I think that's a really good building block because he turned over a few that were like, whoa. And he did it in 23 too, but he just didn't throw it. It's a really effective pitch, especially against lefties. And I think it can be effective against right-handed hitters as well.
Brody Brecht is like the pitcher you're dreaming to get in your system if you are a pitching development type. Like, if you're a pitching coach, like, I imagine these are the players that you're really just screaming to get, like high-end athletes, elite pure stuff, just a guy who you can hopefully unlock and help him get more results out of the elite pure stuff that he has.
Yeah, like when you talk about moldable balls of clay, like, this is who everyone kind of like talks about, not like talks about literally Brody Brecht, but like, this is like as fun as you can
get. The prototype.
But, I'm really curious to see how he does in his pro debut this spring. I think it will not say necessarily a lot, but I'm very curious to just see his trajectory, how he's used, how aggressive they are. Just, I think a lot of questions that will be answered and provide a lot of insight, but the two headliners, Condon and Brecht at the top, will get a lot of love and they're the biggest names. But the guy that I really grew to like after his freshman year at Texas and then more so last spring and even throughout the draft process with Jared Thomas, I think that he just kind of flew under the radar in terms of, like, I'd say just top end college talent. I think getting him at 42 was a relative steal. Like, he's got a, I mean, there are tools there with him. He's got plus hand speed and bat speed at the plate. He tapped into some more raw power this spring, got the ball up in the air more to the pull side. He's a plus runner. He's a really good athlete. You can stick him in center field. There's above average arm strength with him. He's a good athlete. I think there's just a lot to like with Thomas and its advanced barrel ability. He had a strong pro debut.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that up arrow remains next to his name even after the draft.
Yeah, he's a good one. He was one of their better pro debuts. The outfield first base defense with him was intriguing, and I talked to a lot of scouts who were really excited about him playing center field moving forward in pro ball, and that's where most people kind of expected him to play moving forward. Cole Messina, the guy who they took right behind Jared Thomas in the third round, is a player that I felt like increasingly I found myself liking him. Just given his production at South Carolina, the power that he has, the really well-regarded defensive skill he has behind the plate, and also just the fact that he's a much better athlete than I expected him to be, just looking at the frame, hearing about like his athletic testing, his speed for his size is kind of sneaky good. His leaping ability apparently is like shockingly good for a player of his size. So there are a lot of things to like here. There are some swing and miss questions that I'm going to have. I think there's some moving parts offensively, but I mean, he's got a lot of power, and there were some people who thought Messina was one of the best receivers in college baseball behind the plate. He's got above average arm strength, so getting a catcher like that in the third round who's got some tools, and I have some confidence he'll stick behind the plate and be a good defensive catcher, I like that package at 77.
Yeah, I'm with you on Messina, and he was another guy during the college season that was a steady riser. And like you said, where they got him with their fourth pick, that's another one I think you'd be excited about. And I think you hit on the biggest thing and perhaps one of the biggest appeals with Messina is you look at him, you watch him get off the bus and whatnot. You might not necessarily think that just upon first look, he does have this kind of exciting tool set for a catcher. You mentioned the defense. He's a sneaky athlete for his build. Not even necessarily that sneaky. He tested really well. There's legit impact.
Yeah, I guess maybe deceptive. Like if you just look at him, you maybe wouldn't think he is, but like you're right. If you just look at his athletic testing, it's pretty loud.
Yeah. And I think that again, he didn't have the strongest pro debut, but it was like a micro sample size. But there's real impact there. There's some hitability. And then I guess in a similar breath, Blake Wright, another fun athlete, had a decent pro debut. He had 270 with six doubles and two jacks, plus bat to ball skills. I'm curious just to see how much power he's able to get into. He had a career year at Clemson last year, hit 340 with 22 jacks. And so far so good, but he's another fun one.
Mm-hmm.
And then at least on the arm side, shifting focus again, Connor Eaton had a really good pro debut from George Mason. He pitched exclusively in relief between Fresno and Spokane. He started at George Mason, but he's got a fastball up to 96 with life through the zone, pairs it with an at least above average slider that was really effective mm-hmm. both at George Mason and in his pro debut. I think that that's someone that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, his four-seam and two-seam fastball graded out really well on the Stuff Plus metrics that we have, and he had a 16-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio. I think if you're looking at a best pro debut, it's either Eaton or if you want to go on the position player side, Thomas. So those both had good debuts. And I'll just get in my two pitching names that I like on day three. Maybe you kind of overlap with me here, but I'm really intrigued with Sam Gerth at 14 or in the 14th round, I should say. He signed for $300,000. And then the pick after him, 15th rounder Luke Thielen out of Western Michigan. And then Gerth is a Navarro College, the one JUCO product of this class. Gerth is like a big physical 6'3", 225, sinker slider type who's been up to 95. The slider has flashed. It's inconsistent now. I think there's some low-hanging fruit maybe with the delivery to help him throw more strikes. And then another physical pitcher, Luke Thielen, 6'5", 210. He had a breakout season this spring. It was a strikeout rate that had improved, 93, 94. He's been up to 99 with the fastball. Another breaking ball that has flashed but lacks some consistency. So these guys both might be relievers, but they also have some intriguing stuff. And I think there are a lot of pitchers in this class that have exciting stuff and maybe some control questions. We haven't touched on LeBaron Johnson. He's a guy that I've been enamored with at times, but just hasn't really taken the full step forward. But I like his fastball slider as well if he can throw some more strikes. So those are some of the arms that I'm high on. And Peter, you can kind of finish this off here.
Yeah, with you on Thielen and Gerth. Know more about Thielen than I do Gerth, but two guys with legit arm strength, Thielen especially. two pitch guys at the moment. And then with LeBaron Johnson, I'm happy you brought him up because it's clear that you're going to need to tinker with and refine the fat. Like, it's just not a bad misser right now, which I mean, it's just not going to play. So, I mean, you need to,
he feels much more like a ground ball machine than like a fastball bat misser to me.
Yeah.
Like, plays down in the zone better than up in the zone.
Yeah. And it's a really unique attack angle and release height. Like, it's almost a 7 foot release height. And so I think, like you said, he's got to play to its strength and get it down in the lower half of the zone, because that power gyro slider that he has, you know, it's at least a 55, at least in my look at him, it gets a ton of swings and misses. If he can just hone in like so many of these guys on the strike throwing, that's going to be such a key for him. But the other guy on day three is Everett Catlett from Georgetown. 6'7" lefty, attacks from a lower slot up to 96 from down there. Has an effective slider, needs to dial in a third pitch. His changeup is okay against righties, just to kind of show it. But on day three, I think that that's a name that you can be, you know, pretty intrigued about getting, because he was someone throughout the spring, and I know that we were talking about it in Slack and whatnot, but he had a really, really good season. And I think getting him on day three, you can be fired up about it. So, and that we haven't even touched on some of the other guys in this class. So, I mean, even, you know, for his, I guess, lack of stellar pro debut that Condon had, and, you know, you can kind of hope and almost assume that he's going to get better. You know, this is a, I think, a fun class. It has a real chance.
Yeah, it is. Okay, let's move into the Dodgers. They had significantly less draft capital than most teams. That is typically the case for them. They also didn't have a second and fifth round pick this year, so we got just three guys to headline at the very top. So at 23 overall, they took Kellen Lindsey, the pop-up Florida high school shortstop, in the first round. In the third round, they took high school third baseman Chase Harlan out of Pennsylvania. And then in the fourth round, they took Cal Poly left-hander Jacob Wright. So just purely on volume and the amount of money the Dodgers had to spend, there's less to talk about here. But as is always the case with the Dodgers, they seem to get more out of less better than any team in the game. So if you want to look smart in 6 years, the safe bet is just to say this is your favorite draft class, despite the numbers and the volume and the where they're actually picking. But I mean, Kellen Lindsey is just a really fun player to start things off with. It's like the frequent Trey Turner comparisons he got in high school maybe are not fair to him at this stage, but he is a top of the scale runner, was one of the best runners in the class. He's a really gifted athlete, multi-sport athlete. Again, we talked about a lot of multi-sport athletes on today's podcast. He was a high school quarterback, took a step forward in the spring for a lot of Florida scouts who saw him hitting at a high level, really maybe playing better defense at shortstop. There's some thought previously that he would have to move to center field just given his speed. And I think often, even I've done this in the past with some players, CJ Abrams is a standout. Like, if you see a really just impactful runner, I think it's easy to push them off the position and say, oh, they can just go play center field. But he is a good defensive shortstop. He's got solid arm strength. He's got a lot of contact skills. It's a fairly direct line drive oriented swing. The power with him is going to be the biggest question. He's not the most physical player now. He might not ever grow into above average or even solid average raw power, but he does enough other things well to develop into a solid above average regular if he just makes contact and continues to develop as a shortstop. So it's a good one to start out with. Are there any other players that you're drawn to after Lindsey, or anything you want to add on to Lindsey, Peter?
You nailed it with Lindsey. Chase Harlan in the third, big physical kid. The hit tool is going to need to develop, but there's real impact with Harlan. And I think with the Dodgers, they fit in that bucket where you kind of look a little extra hard at the pitchers they take, just given their knack for developing arms, developing stuff. And they're the back-to-back pitchers they took, I guess not back, back-to-back given just their
They're back-to-backs.
Yeah. Jacob Wright and Brooks Auger. Two intriguing arms for me. Jacob Wright from Cal Poly, little lefty, but you know, he's got big time stuff packed into his compact frame, up to 95 with tons of life through the zone, pairs it with two distinct high spin breakers in a really long and with a legit sweeper. kind of a power sweeper at that, and then a curveball in the upper 70s to low 80s that takes on a bigger shape, but it'll flash some depth and teeth, and he's got a real knack for spinning the baseball. He's around the strike zone. Like, I think that's a really fun arm. He's got starter traits. And then Brooks Auger is more on like the arm strength side than pitchability side, but had a strong season at Mississippi State. Kind of a power arm, fastball up to 97 with plenty of life through the zone. It plays up in the top half of the zone, and then he pairs it with a hard gyro like slider. He started some at Mississippi State. I think his long term home is in the bullpen. But you know, he's got the fastball slider can be a really effective 1-2 punch for him professionally, just as it was at Mississippi State. But Wright is kind of the guy that I have circled. I think he's got a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the college hitters, they only drafted two college hitters inside the first 10 rounds. Both Elijah Hainline and Cole Myers, though, did stand out for strong walk rates. I mean, the Dodgers in general seem to select for and develop strong OBP and just like swing decisions with their hitters. So that's unsurprising. Eighth rounder, Brendan Tunick, I think, is a guy we have to hit on here, just given the bonus he got. Signed for $410,000 in the eighth round. He is a very high-level athlete. He didn't have the sort of track record on the circuit that a lot of teams maybe would have needed to have confidence to sign him out of his college commit, but he's a plus runner. He's got the range for center field. I think it's a projectable frame that's going to add power. And because everything is kind of compelling and exciting outside of the hit tool, I think just given, again, you mentioned the Dodgers and their track record for developing arms, I think they've done a great job with hitters as well. So that's an intriguing one. What else stands out to me about this Dodgers draft is I don't know if there are any other teams that hammered the signing bonus contingency on day three like they did. Maybe there are some teams, I'm just not noticing them, but none of their day three players signed for like they actually got this money. But in terms of how it shows up on our draft board, our draft results page, $147,500 on all these players. Essentially, they were, the way they executed the bonus, they could save $2,500 on each of those bonuses towards the pool, and the players would still get $150,000. That is a very like esoteric and super nerdy like draftnik thing to care about. I don't think it really matters, but just looking at the results here, it stood out to me, and I don't think I've seen another team do this to this extent with their day three players. But again, maybe I'm wrong with that.
Yeah, and you said that, again, you made a better point about the Dodgers developmentally. They do a great job across the board. Like, yeah, of course, we're going to look closer at pitchers, but they do an outstanding job developing hitters as well. So, I mean, I'm looking down the board. The other guy that I think was intriguing to me was 13th round pick Mike Villani at a Long Beach State. Relatively low mileage arm. Came off an injury in 2023, he was not injured. But pitched 25 innings at Long Beach in 24, strictly out of the bullpen. Like, he's a reliever all the way, but another fun two pitch mix guy with his fastball slider combination. I got a good look at him on the Cape pre-draft. Fastball up to 97 with a lot of life through the zone. Really effective slider that's got two plane tilt, more sweep than it has depth. Got plenty of whiffs with it. I think on day three, that's a fun kind of sleeper arm to watch develop. And then last pick on day two, Seamus Barrett from LMU, Loyola Marymount. 6'7" righty. I think, again, this is like just a really fun and moldable ball of clay potentially for the Dodgers. And he had his best college season to date at LMU in 24. 58 Ks across 43 innings, pitched out of the bullpen a handful of times in his pro debut for Rancho Cucamonga. But there's stuff there. You know, you can add some physicality and strength to his body. You know, you could see everything kind of take another step forward. So these guys will all be fairly fun to watch. Jacob Wright is the arm that I've probably got the biggest circle around, though. I think he's got a chance to be a really fun one.
I just tabbed through most of the other teams to see if they had the same 147,500 thing on day three, and none of them did. And I also realized I don't even know what the point would be in the signing bonus contingency on day three, because there's no slot value that you're saving from with those picks. It's just anything over 150 doesn't come out of your pool. So I'm really curious why those bonuses are those specific numbers. But either way, let's move on to the Padres.
Just like a manager needs to plan to get that perfect matchup in the late innings of a game, you need to have a strategy to protect you and your family's future. That's why long before they ever sponsored the Baseball America podcast, I used SelectQuote when I needed to find life insurance. It was fast, it was easy, and it gave me peace of mind that I was getting the right policy at the best price possible. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion of coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work for carriers to get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to selectquote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/BA. Go to selectquote.com/BA today to get started. That's selectquote.com/BA.
When creating your own business, the most important part is your ideas. So why let the headache of registering your business hold those ideas back? It's time to learn about a great idea that will keep you going and growing, LegalZoom. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place. Setting up your business properly and remaining compliant are things you want to get right from the get-go, but you don't have to strain your brain or wallet. LegalZoom saves you from wasting hours making sense of the legal stuff. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of business legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from around the country has your back. Over the last 20 years, LegalZoom helped start, run, and protect millions of businesses. LegalZoom, now you're in business. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires 12/31/24. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. Disclaimer, LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC.
When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search. But what if you could get rid of the search and just match? You can with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed is the easy choice when we need to make a hire at Baseball America. It provides excellent tools to help get our job out in front of qualified candidates, and it helps me keep me organized throughout the hiring process. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Consistently one of the more exciting teams to watch in the draft because they just take big swings on demographics that other teams are just frankly afraid to sign out of the draft, where a lot of teams are just moving towards security and safety with college players and near proximity players. The Padres will take high school pitchers. They will take high school players that are far away. They will take off the radar players. They have got all those demographics this year. They picked 25. They took high school left-handed pitcher Cash Mayfield in the first round. In the second round, they took California left-handed pitcher Boston Bateman, another high school pitcher. In the third round, they took Cobb Hightower, shortstop out of North Carolina, who I believe was the first player in this year's draft who we did not have on the BA 500. In the fourth round, they took Kansas State right-handed pitcher Tyson Nabors. With their two compensation picks at 134 and 135, they took Tennessee outfielder Kavars Tears and Arizona right-handed pitcher Clark Candiotti. And then in the fifth round, they spent a huge overslot bonus on high school third baseman Cale Fountain, and then subsequently drafted a lot of college seniors to save money at the slots to pay for that pick. So a really fun draft from the Padres. I am always a fan of the Padres draft. Just, I mean, frankly, they take a lot of high school players, and that's just a fun demographic, Peter. So it's kind of the anti-college draft guy draft here. And I think Cash Mayfield is a fun one to start. I'm kicking myself now because I think we had Cash Mayfield linked to the Padres fairly consistently at pick 25 in like mocks. And I know I had him there at one point. I'm not sure if it was like the second to last mock draft, but I flipped off of that because there were some rumors that they were on like some college catchers, either Walker Yonark or Caleb Lomavita.
I can vouch that you had him there. I know you did.
Yeah, but like at this point, I'm like, and I even had some people after the fact reach out and say, like, dude, what are you doing putting a college player with the Padres in your mock? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just not going to do that moving forward. Like, regardless of what I'm hearing, I should just throw them a high school player because they love to take them. I think I'll pull this up as you're talking about some players, but there's a stretch that they've had just high school players in the first round. But I mean, Cash Mayfield is a guy with above average stuff across the board and plus control, who's moving in the right direction velocity wise and is a left-handed pitcher. So I like that pick. But Peter, I've been talking a lot. What do you think about this class?
Yeah, I mean, to keep the ball rolling a little bit on Mayfield, it is, you could have 355s across the board with his fastball, slider, and changeup. Really aesthetically pleasing, low effort delivery, fastball up to 97. It took a step forward this spring. And then the above average grade on his slider, it's more of a projection than it is a now grade. I'd say it's probably closer to a 55 than it is a 50, but I think that hinges on him adding more velocity and teeth to the pitch. And then his changeup is further along just due to his advanced feel for it. And he's got plus control. He can land all three for strikes, starter traits. He was an arm that was a popular one to really like throughout the spring, and I fell into that bucket as well. Boston Bateman in the second. There's some reliever risk here with Bateman. He's this massive, I mean, he's nicknamed Sasquatch, and honestly, appropriately so. He's 6'8", 240.
And endearingly so, too. I remember his dad referring to his son as Sasquatch at a few events in the summer. So,
yeah. But the headliner with him is his high 70s high spin curveball. It flashes big time depth with really sharp two-plane tilt. He'll get it up into the 2900 RPM range. It'll consistently flash plus. Fastball this last spring was up to 96. And both his low 80s slider and mid 80s changeup have kind of average potential. The slider definitely has average potential. The changeup right now is more fringy. But right now he's kind of outpitched the reliever concerns. I'm curious to see if he's able to continue to do so. But the guy that I'm most excited about in the entire class for the Padres, and it's becoming a colder take, honestly, day by day, is Cobb Hightower.
Gonna be kicking myself for this one, Peter.
There's no reason to kick yourself because like there were team, like he flew way under the radar.
This will be another Evan Carter that just cuts me, won't it?
There's a chance that like, I don't want to give out too big of a little, but like he could be next up like in this Padres system. And I think I might read
Peter's report on Cobb Hightower.
Yes. Great plug. But I have him ranked eighth right now in the Padres system. And I think I have him underranked. Like, I think like outside of DeVries and Salas, he's the guy that I'm most excited about in this entire system. And he hasn't even like technically made his affiliated debut this year or yet. But I mean, just watching him and watching the video both from this spring and then also this summer in the Bridge League in Arizona, it's just a super hitterish look in the box with quick hands. It's a lot of bat speed. advanced barrel accuracy. And there's such an appealing compact explosiveness to his operation. He's a super athletic mover. Like, it just screams hitter. And, you know, he's just got a super engaged and in sync lower half, quick, tight turns. Like, it's really what it looks like. And his bat speed, when you pair his bat speed with his barrel control, it bodes really well as it pertains to his ability to hit for power in game. And it's a super enticing hit power blend. And defensively, I think it's going to be somewhere on the dirt. He'll get every chance to develop it short. I wouldn't be shocked if he moves over to second base. And he's this bat first second baseman. But I mean, he lit up the Bridge League in Arizona and was kind of the talk of, of the complexes out there. So,
I mean, he was the first player mentioned in our best pro debut section of their draft report card, despite the fact that he really didn't debut just because that Bridge League was so impressive. I'd pulled up just to see how long the Padres have made their first overall pick a high school selection. And you have to go back to 2016 when the team took Cal Quantrill at number 8 overall out of Stanford to get a non-high school player. The high school players the Padres have taken in the first round over the years have been, this is starting in 2017, going to 2024. It's Mackenzie Gore, Ryan Weathers, CJ Abrams, Robert Hassel, Jackson Merrill, Dylan Lesko, Dylan Head, and now Cash Mayfield. So they have been as high school heavy as any team in the league in the first round. Well, just in general.
Yeah. No, that's a great note, but man, I'm so fired up about Hightower. I'm such a believer in, you know, and I say 55-55, like his hit tool right now is probably closer to a 6 than it is a 55. And he's able to tap into that power in game and the impact that he's able to generate. Like, it's just, it's a really, really exciting offensive profile for me. And it just, it's what it looks like.
Well, let me mention Cale Fountain a little bit in the fifth round, since he is such a big piece of this draft class for the Padres. He does not have that same like pure hitting ability that we're hearing about with Hightower. He is very much a power over hit profile, but it's a ton of power. He is a big 6'5", 230-pound corner infielder. He has turned around 90-plus mile-per-hour fastballs for homers. He's got the sort of juice that he can homer from pole to pole. There are some questions about the swing and miss. He doesn't always get on plane. The levers can get a little bit long. But he made solid swing decisions. He performed at a solid level. I think that it's going to be like, there's almost a little bit of like Kobe Mayo-ishness to this pick for me. He's like a big third baseman with a lot of power. He has big arm strength. How much is he going to hit? He's going to need to clean up his footwork to stick at third base. He's a little bit stiff with his movements defensively. Like, he feels to me like what Kobe Mayo felt like at the time coming out of high school. And I'm thinking of him because me and Ben were just talking about Kobe Mayo and the Orioles on future projection. But it's a lot of upside here. And clearly the Padres think highly of him getting to that power upside to sign him out of an LSU commit. And really at the, I don't know if I'd say at like the expense of the rest of their draft class, but they had to kind of pivot around this pick in order to afford him and give him the money he needed to sign, just based on what they did 6 through 10. So certainly, despite the fact that he went fifth, like, I mean, this is the third biggest bonus they handed out in the class. So a solid piece to it.
Yeah. The key for him is just like, I mean, you said it, a lot hinges on the hit tool with him and making contact enough. You know, he struggled at times, got a little long. But the power is, it's comfortably plus with him. The key is just making contact enough to get to it in game. And he's got an above average arm at third. I'm curious to see if they eventually move him off the position. He's a little bit of a stiff mover. But man, it's big time bat speed. It's easy plus raw power. If he can make contact enough, there's some intriguing offensive upside here with him. But a little bit further down, well, I guess moving back a tick up the board, Tyson Nabors in the fourth screams like fast moving reliever, could be one of the first guys in this draft class, in the Padres draft class, to make their big league debut. Had a strong pro debut, even though it was only 4 2/3 innings with Lake Elsinore, but struck out 9. Fastball stands out. His stuff really stands out. Mid to upper 90s heater, average 22 inches of ride through the zone. It's outstanding when located in the top half of it. pairs it with this power downer curveball that's got plenty of teeth, and also this power slider. You could stick plus grades probably on both, I'd say. And I think that he just, you can easily envision someone like that, as long as the strikes continue to be reasonably consistent with neighbors. It's been a little bit of an inconsistency at times, but if he's around the zone, I'd say on a regular basis, you can kind of see him ascending pretty quickly through the system. But another guy I wanted to hit on was Kai Roberts, their seventh round draft pick out of Utah. He's an excellent athlete. He's a great runner. And I think that with him, he's not only a plus runner, but he knows how to run, which only adds to his effectiveness on the base paths. But he's a high level athlete. He can really go and get it in center field with these rangy long strides. He's 6'5". He's got a great body. And had an outstanding pro debut with Lake Elsinore. He had 340 across 100 at bats with 9 extra base hits, swiped 14 bags. I know that's a guy that they're really excited about. I am as well, because you have these now tools and then stuff to dream on. Like, it's a really fun profile going forward. So that's the other guy I'm excited about. Nick Wissman is a fun subby guy from Dayton. They took him in the 8th round, but a big time sleeper right now is Sean Barnett, their 11th round pick out of Wingate. And it's not because of his offense. It's because of what he can do on the mound, honestly. And people listening to this, and they might be like, what the heck? But because he threw 5 innings at Wingate in 2024 and walked 6. But he is an outstanding athlete. They had him on the mound a little bit in Arizona, in the complex league or the bridge league, whatever you want to call it. But it's an easy 98 with life through the zone with this high spin power slider in the high 80s to low 90s. Like, it is big time arm talent. You have athleticism, you have stuff, you have upside. There's a ton to dream on with Barnett. I know that he's someone that has made serious noise out there. And I'm really curious to see what he does long term, because he had a decent pro debut at the Dish as well, across 50 at bats, collected four extra base hits, hit 280. But I mean, I like him better on the mound. Like, we talk so often about these fun and moldable balls of clay. Like, this is a guy that, you know, you can really develop. He's as low mileage, honestly, as it gets across his college career. I think he threw 17 and 2/3 innings, and that's combining his summer stats with his college stats. But man, it's arm strength, it's stuff, it's velo. There are a lot of boxes that he's checking, and he's already flashing it. So if he continues to add polish and is around the zone and competes around the zone, like, he's got a real chance. So this is a guy to keep on the back burner for now, but definitely monitor it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Padres system might not be in the best state it's ever been, but I'm a little envious of you, Peter, that you get to write it up, because I feel like San Diego always has really exciting players, and they always find a way to just come up with an impressive farm system and find talent all over the place. So that's the Padres. Let's move on into our final team of the division, our final team of the draft review series. That is the San Francisco Giants, who also have a fun and unique draft class. I think because of, in part, just their lack of picks. They didn't have a second or third round pick this year because of signing Blake Snell and Matt Chapman. In the first round, they took Florida State outfielder James Tibbs. In the 4th round, with their second pick, they took a very different outfielder out of college in Mississippi State's Dakota Jordan. And then in the 5th round, they took San Diego outfielder Jacob Christian. So an outfield group at the top of this draft, I think probably the most top-heavy draft class we'll have, just given the nature of the picks that the Giants had and how they utilized their bonus pool money. They went under slot with every single pick through, I believe, the top 10 rounds outside of their 4th round pick with Dakota Jordan. They went $1.37 million over slot to sign him with the 116th pick. That makes sense. We had both Tibbs and Dakota Jordan as top 40 overall talents in this draft class. We had Tibbs as kind of a locked and loaded, no doubt, first rounder. Dakota Jordan was more in that like kind of fringy first round, like just beyond it, I think, for most people probably, given the hit risk and the strikeout rates. But he has just dynamic bat speed and raw power and athleticism. And meanwhile, James Tibbs is like this really polished pure hitter with maybe not so great athleticism and running ability. And you're not really sure what you're going to get from him defensively, but you should have a lot of confidence in just the hitting ability and the power that he can bring to the table. So, Peter, I know what you think about James Tibbs, and listeners of the Draft Pod will know what you think about James Tibbs. But what do you think about this Giants draft class? And maybe we can talk a little bit about like your perception of this draft strategy, because I thought it was pretty cool them getting a pair of top 40 talents despite picking 13 and then 116.
Yeah, I'm with you. Starting with Tibbs, and not to beat a dead horse, because he's been a guy that we've talked about a lot dating back to even last spring, but he was one of my favorite guys on the college hitting side for quite some time. Starting last year, I caught him really good on the Cape and viewed him really highly, and then it was nice to see him carried over into the season. But had a strong pro debut in single A San Jose, struggled a bit in high A when he got promoted to Eugene. Struck out 25 times in 67 at-bats, definitely something worth monitoring. But at least coming into the draft for me with Tibbs, it was 60 game power and at least above average hit tool. I think defensively, there are some questions because he's not the fleetest of foot. He's not this primo athlete, but he's got above average arm strength in right field, which is where they've had him defensively in his pro debut. But the routes can get a little bit scenic at times, so polishing those up will be key. But
that's a good way to describe it.
yeah, but the offensive profile here is really exciting. So he's a guy that I will be following closely. And then with Dakota Jordan, like you said, there are kind of these different players. Like, it is top of the skill bat speed, probably
like legitimately. Like, if you guys, I would say, like, if you're trying to see like what does really good bat speed look like, just watch Dakota Jordan swing, because sometimes I think it's difficult, or at least more difficult to see on video, but there is
in like 2x speed.
Yeah, there's absolutely no missing it with Dakota Jordan. He has some of the fastest hands I think I've ever seen from an amateur hitter. I'm really like trying to think of the players that have this sort of hand speed, and the guys I'm thinking of would be like Austin Beck. Austin Hendrick had really quick hands. Like, I really can't think of someone who has, he might have just the quickest hands I've seen, and that leads to just tremendous top end power. Like, he is also just pretty physical, like not pretty. I mean, he looks like a linebacker. He was a really impressive football player in high school. It's real elite power upside. It's just, can he make the adjustments? Can he pick up secondaries? Can he make enough contact? Like, if he can make solid contact, he's got like near elite like power upside. It's just that has held him back in college, and I imagine that's going to be what holds him back in pro ball. So it's just a matter of like, what sort of hitter will he wind up being?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it's top of the scale bat and hand speed. When he makes contact, he generates extremely high level impact. It's probably double plus raw power, but the contact skills and hit tool right now are really lagging behind the power. So shoring up the pitch recognition skills, shoring up the contact skills are going to be key going forward, because they're below average at Mississippi State, even for as productive a season as he had. I mean, he made contact at just a 65% clip in looking at it, which almost in a weird way makes what he did at Mississippi State like that much more impressive. Like, he hit 354 with 20 jacks and 14 doubles, drove in 72 across 63 games, and he made contact less than two thirds of the time. Like, it's such a, but like, again, going forward, he's going to have to make enough contact professionally to tap into this offensive upside. And it is a big if, but man, if he's able to, you know, there's a real chance he's an impactful middle of the order bat going forward. And then I liked Robert Hipwell in the sixth, was sort of another popular name, at least coming into the spring. But
yeah, I think if he wasn't suspended, a lot more people would probably know about Hipwell and maybe be more excited about him.
Yeah,
when he's been on the field, has been impressive at times.
Yeah, and he was fresh off a really impressive sophomore year at Santa Clara, coming into 24, where he hit 329 with 12 doubles and 14 jacks, and then he was just okay across a really limited sample size in 2024, where he hit just 273 with, I believe, 9 extra base hits, 3 of which were home runs. But he's got solid back to ball skills, probably potentially above average pull side impact. He's got above average arm strength over at third. I think offensively you're looking at another guy with a chance to have this decent hit power blend. At least right now it's trending more power over it is over hit. But there isn't this like glaring lack of a hit tool. Mm-hmm. With Hipwell. So he's another guy to kind of keep an eye on moving forward. And then in the eighth round, Nico Mazza is a really interesting arm out of Southern Miss. Southern Miss has a real knack for producing these kind of potentially high ceiling-ish arms. Like Mazza fits the mold. If people remember, Hurston Waldrip started at Southern Miss before transferring to Florida. They've got another one in 2026, Drake Meeks, who is absolutely going to be a big name to watch. But Mazza's got a low to mid-90s fastball that was up to 96. Again, with carrying life through the zone, pairs it with a really effective kind of power-ish slider. And I really like his changeup. That could be potentially the best pitch in his arsenal. And I think, again, getting him in the eighth, there's value there. Undersized righty, but he's got stuff packed into his compact frame.
Yeah. Two hitters that I like on day three that I thought had a chance to go somewhere on day two are 12th rounder Xander Darby, third baseman out of UC Santa Barbara. He's interesting because he cut the strikeout rate significantly. He's shown solid on-base skills in college throughout his career. He's got a frame that I think is still projectable, could add a little bit more power. And so maybe you're getting like a power OBP type. I think he needs to improve defensively to stick at third base, but there are some things to like with his profile. In the 14th round, Jeremiah Jenkins, first baseman out of Maine, who had kind of silly batted ball metrics in college. He has tremendous raw power. He's 6'4", 238 pounds. Has a really odd setup at the plate that with like a timing mechanism that I think sometimes look like it doesn't exist with kind of his late trigger. But he was also one of the better debut players of a very limited like pro debut class. There are only a handful of players who even got like official time, but he had a 912 OPS in 49 plate appearances, hit a couple of home runs, tripled, which it's kind of impressive because I don't think he's the best runner in the world. Had 3 doubles, but he has real power. I don't know like what sort of pure hitter you're looking at with him, like if he needs a swing chains moving forward, just given how odd that setup is. But he had kind of bonkers numbers at Maine in back-to-back seasons, homered 21 times in 2023, then he homered 22 times in 24. So there's certainly some power here, and to sign him for 150K in the 14th round, I think was pretty good value.
Yeah, I'm with you on Jenkins, and the setup with him is really, really unique. But
I always had a fun time watching him hit because it's just unique. If you guys can pull up video of him, I would encourage you to do so.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the hit tool's fringy, and there are questions about surrounding it, but it is comfortably 6 raw power, especially the pull side where it's probably closer to a 70. And then on day three, the guy that I really wish that they were able to sign was their 19th round pick, Ryan Urey, however you say it, out of Oklahoma State, 6'8 lefty. What I was lucky enough to see him on the Cape before he left, but like when I tell you this kid was playing catch at 96 tonight, like, he was playing catch at 96 to 98. It was the most low effort, under control, Maybe not necessarily under control, but it was the lowest effort 98 I've seen in quite some time. But the strikes are a real issue. Like, what is going to be the go-to secondary offering with him? But he's a low mileage arm just due to missing 2023 coming off injury. Like, I think that would have been a really fun guy to sign and get in your system and develop, because there are some really exciting traits there between his size, between his stuff. You know, there's a lot to develop, but I like the Giants class as a whole. Like, Nico Mazza is the one guy that I'm going to kind of be like, arms wise is probably my favorite one in the class. Like, the slider's a 55, probably closer to a 6. The changeup will flash a 55. Fastball doesn't wow you from a velo standpoint. It's up to 96 with some carry, but it's a 5'3" release height. Like, there are some really fun traits with him stuff wise, and he improved year over year at Southern Miss. So I think it's a fun class, but I would have really loved if they were able to get that done.
Yeah. All right, Peter, we've reached the point where we now have to make our picks for our favorite draft class in the division. I've got two that I'm kind of deciding between, leaning towards one. How do you feel about how easy or difficult it is to make your decision for this NL West group?
This one I feel like is difficult. I don't know about you, but I still don't really have going through our previous five episodes of this series, in most, maybe all, I was kind of like, okay, this is my favorite class, and I'll circle back on it at the end. But I haven't felt that, at least at this point.
I will tell you, I like both the Diamondbacks and the Padres classes at the top here. It's easy to like the Diamondbacks, I feel like, because of just the volume of picks they had inside the top five rounds. They took a lot of athletic high school players that I like. I like Daniel Egan in that class, but I always find myself liking the Padres. And the more you talked about Cobb Hightower, the more I was getting excited about it. I'm a sucker for left-handed pitchers like Cash Mayfield. I think Boston Bateman is incredibly fun. Again, there are more pitchers further down on the board that you talked about, Sean Barnett. So I'm just going to go with the Padres. I love their process. I love the way they scout players. I love their just lack of fear in taking the high school demographic, where increasingly the industry goes more towards college players. So like, a lot of this is just me being a fan of their draft philosophy in general. But I like all three of their first picks. I think Tyson Nabors in the fourth round is a guy who I could have easily seen going in the third round, just given where some of the top college relievers tend to go. Another like big swing of the guy like Cale Fountain in the fifth round. I like him there. I'm going with the Padres, and that's with me, like, again, not knowing as much as I would have liked to have known about Cobb Hightower before the draft, but now, just given what we've heard about him, without him even playing in a pro game, I'm going to go Padres.
I like it. So when you said D-backs, I'm with you there. I was also kind of debating between like the D-backs and the Padres, and, you know, thinking about the Rockies a little bit. I'll go D-backs though. Like you said, a lot of it has to do with just the sheer number of picks that they had within the top five rounds. And
yeah,
it also helps that I am a fan of Caldwell, Waldschmidt, JD Dix is another really good player.
If I liked Waldschmidt as much as you did, I might take the D-backs, but I just think I'm a little lighter on him. So that the Luciano pick was enough for me to go to the Padres. Not that I don't like Luciano. I was just surprised that he was taken there and got nearly a million, but I could easily just be too light really, on him.
That one was the most aggressive pick of I think probably the, at least the NL West series, but I do believe in Waldschmidt in the hit power combo. Like, I can see why people would be just a little bit skeptical in general. Like, there's, you know, you're looking at a left fielder, like, he really better be able to produce both from a power standpoint and also just a sheer hit ability standpoint. But I do believe in Waldschmidt's profile. And then Egan in the third, I know we talked about him, but an arm that I really liked this spring at Presbyterian, I know you did too, fastball up to, you know, 96, 97 with over 20 inches of carry through the zone, big downer curveball that had a miss rate north of 53%, a harder gyro slider that also had a miss rate north of 50%, just really exciting stuff. And then Foley in the fifth, if you want to just isolate into the top five rounds and almost call him like a bookend in Slade, Caldwell, and Foley, the bookends. I mean, Foley's got big time arm talent. He's a big old donkey on the mound at 6'5", 240, tons of arm strength. If they can get him around the zone, I mean, the arsenal is really, really exciting. There's legit upside there. So that's a fun class. And we didn't even talk in our little recap about who they got in days two and three, or day three rather, or later in day two, but I'll go D-backs.
Cool. Well, it's always nice when we have differing opinions, even though it seems like we both liked these classes at the top, San Diego and Arizona, pretty well. So cool. That is the draft review series. Hopefully you guys enjoyed these. If you're just joining in at the end of the series because of a couple teams and you want just more info on each of the draft classes, or at least what we think on each of the draft classes, they're all up and live in the podcast feed if you want to scan back for that. Peter, anything you want to plug before we get out of here, or anything you want to mention before we finish?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing right now is just all of the great prospect handbook content. I mean, we're going to continue with the top 10 a day for the next couple of weeks, and then the 30s will start to roll out. I know that we're all on our end finishing up the top 30s, and then believe it or not, the college season is now kind of creeping up. So there will be college preview content sooner rather than later. And there's going to be a lot of fun stuff across the board and pieces leading into the college season, and just fun stuff in general. So as always, whether you're more of a fan of the pro stuff or amateur side, like there's going to be plenty of pieces, no matter what you like, up on the site and to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just say Draft Lottery Tuesday, as you're listening to this episode, definitely tune into that. We'll have JJ there in the room. He'll have a piece breaking down like how the ping pong balls came out this year, like he has the first 2 years. We'll have coverage of the lottery itself. We'll have a full first round mock draft ready to go once we know the actual order of the draft for the first time, which is kind of crazy that we don't, but I think a lot of fun in general, adds a lot of excitement to the draft. So make sure you guys are watching that. Let's see if the broadcast can make it a little bit clear what's happening this year. I felt like last year was a little bit confusing, but regardless, it's fun. There's a lot of hope for all the teams who are involved in the draft lottery. 16 teams this year, no White Sox, no A's. Sorry to those organizations, but everyone else who was not in the playoffs has a chance. So good luck to you guys if you're a fan of one of those teams. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you next time, everybody. So long.